Welcome to Real Money with David Holland, the show that focuses on real people, real problems, and real solutions. David is a certified financial planner with over 20 years of financial experience. And because he actually provides advice to clients on a daily basis, our hyperactive compliance department wants us to tell you that David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, a registered investment advisory firm. He also offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Holland Advisory Services and Holland Insurance Services are separate affiliated companies that share common ownership under Holland Financial. Commentary given during this radio program is usually pretty smart, but should not be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities should not be considered an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and financial planning services can only be given after an analysis of an individual's situation. Only if you hire David and his firm to help you, and only available where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering. Here he is, David Holland.
You know, with the scaling back of the bond buying program that's been going on, QE, by the Federal Reserve, part of what had been happening was that had pushed our interest rates, of course, very low. And what was happening is a lot of, there was a lot of you know, kind of borrow here, borrow at home and go overseas with the money. There was a lot of development that was happening in other parts of the world. There was also lending that was happening where, you know, the quote-unquote yield-hungry investor, and that's not one person, that's the, you know, the whole investing community. There were certainly parts of that that would borrow cheaply, okay? So you borrow cheaply here, and then you go and you reinvest overseas, and you make money on the spread. You make money the old-fashioned way with somebody else's money. But what we're seeing is with the Fed pulling back on the bond buying, that's certainly is going to have the potential to strengthen the dollar because it's going to be a slowing of the increase in the amount of money that's going into the system, and then ultimately it will reverse. That's going to take some time, and we'll talk about Yellen in just a minute, what she's going to be doing. But we're seeing a trend starting to develop, and I just want you to be thinking about it or aware of it, that we're seeing investors starting to come out of Turkey. I mentioned Brazil before the break, Thailand, Indonesia, and so there could be a continued sell-off. We saw some of that in 2013 toward the end, and then also see that going into this next year, there's political unrest. There are some challenges, so we'll be keeping an eye on that. And I actually highlighted something I saw in the Wall Street Journal that I wanted to mention to you as well. Indonesia, for example, they are facing higher cost of borrowing. They just went out and did some of their, what they have their 10-year notes, and they paid as little as, where is it, about 3.5% back in April of 2013 now to borrow for the same length of time to go out to the market. It's costing them now closer to 6%. So that, you know, our 10-year treasuries went from 1.5% to 3%. Well, theirs went from 3.5% to 6%. So there is some impact, of course, of what we do on other parts of the world, because a lot of times, you know, I mentioned often, and I mentioned before the break about like a corporate bond being affected by what the yield on the 10-year treasury is. So if a yield on 10-year treasury is 3%, that's considered kind of the quote-unquote safe money, or your, you know, the chances of the U.S. government not being able to pay its bills are pretty low, or at least lower significantly compared to others. So it's used as a benchmark. So you start with the treasury and you start looking at an investment, or you look at a bond or whatever it is, then it's you start stacking on top the amount of risk that is above and beyond what is considered to be, relatively speaking, I don't want to get a bunch of email on this, relatively speaking, a risk-free or low-risk investment, being the treasuries, U.S. treasuries. So if we've got a bond that's perceived to be riskier for a individual business than the U.S. Treasury, which is typically the case, then they might need to pay 5% interest. Or in Indonesia's case, for example, they got to pay close to 6%. And of course, there was a lot of talk in the last couple of years, especially during the Great Recession, and also what happened in Europe with a lot of their challenges and difficulties. You know, some of these countries, it wasn't that long ago, Spain and Italy were paying very high interest rates on, in order to get their debt purchased. And you get above that 7% mark, which is when people start to get a little bit concerned when a country has to pay more than 7% to issue their debt, to get people to buy that debt. So we're starting to see some of that, but it's always compared to the treasury. So corporate bond, maybe it's 4 or 5% when the U.S. treasury is 3%. And maybe it's, you've got to go to 7 or 8% on some of the foreign debt. So that's going to be interesting to watch how that plays out. And a lot of what's going to affect that is going to be how quickly the Federal Reserve chairwoman, chairperson, is going to handle the unwinding of the bond buying program that is called quantitative easing. It was at their meeting in December that they decided to reduce the bond buying by $10 billion a month, to go from $85 billion down to $75 billion a month that they're going to continue to buy. And the notes, their meeting notes came out, the minutes from their meetings came out, and basically said the notes were that they're going to be very careful about how they do this. So Yellen was confirmed by the Senate in a vote of, 56 to 26? Yeah, so she was confirmed, and so she begins her four-year term as Federal Reserve Chairperson starting February 1st. And she's been the vice chair. A lot of people don't know this. She's been the vice chair since 2010. So she's been what you would call an heir apparent, right in there behind Bernanke for when he completed his eight-year term. And so at this point, the Federal Reserve has about $4 trillion. That's a big number. $4 trillion of debt that it has purchased. And so what we're first talking about doing is how is she and the rest of the Federal Reserve, which is made up of the bank presidents, how are they going to unwind this and start to slow it even further? And so there are, of course, a lot of concerns about how that's going to be done, understandably. If you do it too quickly, meaning if you take it from $75 billion a month down to, say, 50 and then 25 very quickly, that could shock the market. That could cause interest rates to jump up too quickly for our economy to withstand, because rates are being held low to allow that. Again, that 10-year treasury is at 3% because of the bond buying. Keep that in mind. If the Federal Reserve were not buying $75 billion a month in treasuries, what does that mean? We're still going to need to issue that, right? We still got to issue that debt, because that's new debt being issued by the Treasury, the U.S. Treasury. If not the Federal Reserve buying it, somebody else needs to buy it, and they will. See, the Federal Reserve is the ready buyer. They're going to buy $75 billion, and the Treasury knows they're going to buy it. Everybody else has a choice. The Federal Reserve doesn't really have a choice because of this effort to support the economy. So if the Federal Reserve reduces their bond buying from, say, $75 billion to $50 billion, then there's $25 billion that somebody else needs to buy per month, and they're going to be not quite as a willing or an automatic, you know, gimme, where they'll automatically buy it, and they may require a higher rate of return, 4%, 5%, 6% on that debt. So as that happens, and if that did happen across the board, that will affect other bonds, as we talked about. Everything's relative to that U.S. Treasury. So when that happens, if a company has to pay, say for example, 8% interest to borrow money on a new bond so that it can build a new facility, then that's going to affect its profit, that company's profit, and that can affect the cost of its services or what it manufactures, and it affects the cost of what it passes along to the consumer. So there's a lot of impact of the yield on 10-year treasuries, and that yield is being still held, even though it's doubled. That yield's gone from 1.5% to 3%. It's still a historic low, and it is still holding the cost of borrowing down. And I know this is a mental exercise we got to go through to keep this stuff straight, but I have to do this for myself because it's complicated, but there is a lot for the Federal Reserve to figure out. So the first step, how quickly do they slow down this buying of bonds that's currently at $75 billion? How quickly? I am of the opinion that they're going to be careful and they're going to do a true taper. I think they're going to continue at the $75 billion monthly purchase amount for a while yet, maybe. They do that for the first half of 2014. Then maybe they move into slowing it up. They do that first until they get to where the economy, and they continue to measure and monitor what's happening, and they get to where they finally bring that all the way down to zero. So maybe it goes 75 for a few more months, then it goes to 65. I don't see them going from 75 to zero. So as they do that, they're doing that and see how the economy handles not having that continued, support and the buying of the bonds, which is infusing cash into the system because the Federal Reserve is doing what? They're creating money to buy those bonds. So that is buying the bonds, holding the interest rates low, and it's also putting cash into the system. So they go from 75 down to zero over time in bond buying. They do, I think they do all of that. And it may take another year or two for them to do that. I would probably say longer, maybe two. They do all of that, I think, before they start raising interest rates. Remember, there's two pieces to this. There's the bond buying. And then once they finish that, then they go over and they look at the rate that they charge as well as banks charge each other, what's called the discount rate or the federal fund rate. And I know I've been through this before. If you've listened to the show before, I've been through this before, but we're going to get this straight and keep it straight. Then they get to that rate, which is used for the banks loaning money to each other and then borrowing money if a bank borrows money from the Fed. Then that rate is used for what? That rate is used to set the prime rate, which is usually about 3% over the federal fund rate, which is why the prime rate right now is about 3.25%. And then that prime rate is used to determine if the bank is going to lend at 3.25%, then they're going to borrow at some sort of variation or delta difference from that 3.25% for prime. Maybe they're going to borrow from you for your CD at 1.25%. And that's about where I see CD rates now for a couple year CD. That's what it is. So that 2% spread, that's what they're working off of. So if and when, and the Fed is also signaling that they're still going to wait, and a lot of people, a lot of would-be experts or real experts think that that might be until the end of 2015. So two full years of rates, that Federal Reserve rate staying at 0.25%, meaning prime rate staying at 3.25%, which means that CD rates for the next couple of years very likely could stay at the current level, that 1.5%, depending on, you know, how long of a term you go. So if you're holding your breath out there saying, okay, I hear that rates are going to go up, I'm going to sit tight on my cash and I'm going to go wait, they're going to jump up and I'm going to go buy myself another whole bunch of 5-year CDs paying 5%. Ain't going to happen in the next couple of years. That's my very smart sounding prediction. So it ain't going to happen. So if you're holding your breath, don't hold it. Do something else perhaps with that money to put it to work. So there's a kind of a phase here. The Federal Reserve's got to work through first getting the economy off of its bond buying and taper that all the way off to zero. Then they're going to raise interest rates on the overnight lending, and then that'll affect prime rates and CD rates. And then guess what else they got to do? Then they've got this $4 trillion plus, say, oh, I don't know, another $1 trillion probably over the next couple of years that they will buy of additional debt. So they probably have $5 trillion then in debt that's on their balance sheet. At some point, guess what they're going to do? They're going to want to then sell that back into the open market. Okay? So there's a lot of work still to be done. It's a lot, isn't it? Okay. I think we all need a break. Let's take a break. Rest our mind for a second here. I'll come back and I've got some scams and some other stuff to talk about that I think you'll find interesting. Stay right there.
Are you gambling with too much money invested in the stock market? How can you tell? It's simple. The rule of 100. Take your age and subtract it from 100. The result is how much you might want to keep in the market. The rest should be off the table, invested in something safe. Every rule has an exception, but the rule of 100 is a good starting point to determine if your portfolio is out of balance. Holland Financial is ready to help. Call 888-747-PLAN to schedule your free consultation or visit us at davidholland.com.
All right, let's get back into this, and let me get. We'll go with a little lighter stuff. I know that was a big dissertation on the Federal Reserve, but you know, it really has a pervasive and profound impact on our economy. So it really is something we've got to pay attention to with finances. What's the Federal Reserve's doing? There's an old saying: you can't fight the Fed, and you darn sure want to know what they're up to. They're going to be doing. So let me hit a couple of things. Let's see. Let's kick it off. Let's talk a little bit about scams. And of course, classic scam that everybody is very familiar with, it was the Madoff scam. Bernie Madoff hoodwinking investors for many years. I think the total scam ended up being around $50 billion. Well, JP Morgan just agreed to $2.5 billion in payments to settle allegations that it failed to adequately police Madoff's activities, because he didn't work for them or he wasn't in close ties. They had business relationships with him, and I guess the regulators decided, and maybe in the suit, that they didn't do enough to identify that. So, okay, so let me go to a couple of other things that are scam related. Get this one. This is in our local Daytona Beach News Journal here on the east coast of Central Florida. And there was an Associated Press article they ran that I thought was just extraordinary. Get this, okay? Ex-New York City workers charged in scam. What are we talking about? Scores of retired New York City police officers, firefighters, prison guards were charged on Tuesday. So this is brand new. With faking psychiatric problems to get federal disability benefits. And those false claims came out of conditions that arose after September 11th, the prosecutors said. So there's four ringleaders. What these guys did, four ringleaders coached these guys and gals, I imagine, on how to fake persuasively, effectively, how to fake mental illness or disability. To get, some of them got payouts as high as $500,000. That's crazy. So, and then they got kickbacks for, I guess, so it was kind of like, you've heard the joke about, you know, somebody wanting to be a cop, you know, well, here are cops that are fake an illness. It's kind of sad, but there are some 72 city police, firefighters, correction officers involved, and the dollar amounts are pretty significant. But these guys are getting, ironically going to get some jail time. And more than 100 of these defendants have been charged with crimes, including grand larceny. Because this went on for years, collecting payments that they weren't entitled to. And the ringleaders, they all got kickbacks for basically training people on how to look like they have or act like they have these disabilities. So anyway, I thought that was interesting. I think it's sad, but it's interesting. And it just shows you, I guess, that, you know, even some of the people, most respected people in our society that we hold on a high pedestal, like police and firefighter and other people that are there to protect us, even they can, do things to defraud other people and the system. And in the same vein, the AARP had an interesting, they have a bulletin they put out, and you may get that if you're of AARP age. It was interesting. I saw it and I said, that's something I'd love to talk about. They had kind of their six scam or six common cons they said you should avoid. And I find it very interesting. So I want to talk a little bit about it. I agree with a lot of this. And I think it's really something for everyone to be very careful, especially as we age. We can become more susceptible and we will be targeted. That's the problem, is we can become more susceptible to scams because of potential slowing of our mental abilities, but also we are targeted more as we get older. And roughly one third, according to the article that AARP put out, roughly one third, and I've heard this statistic before, roughly one third of all scam victims are 65 years or older, even though, so is that 33%? Even though they only represent about 12-13% of the population. So they are, what is that, three times the victim than they should be? And that's because they get targeted and also because they're a little more susceptible. So the big ones they mentioned are romance scams, charity scams, the grandparent scams, home repair, healthcare, and investment scams. So I'll just touch on these and give you an idea of what we're talking about. The romance scam is if you are, regardless of your age, if you're out there on the dating sites, there's been scams done through the dating online dating sites where the scammers will develop a relationship with you and then they need money and it's all a scam. And so there are these things happen. What happens is they build that relationship through communication. And then at some point they say, okay, well, let's meet perhaps. They're from another city. Well, guess what? They don't have as much money as you and they need some traveling money to get there. They're going to buy their plane ticket so they can come meet you, give you that big kiss that they've been wanting to give you for a long time, right? And of course, they take the money. So if you're in that situation, you're out there dating on those online websites, and somebody asks for money, maybe that's not somebody you want to date. Okay, so be careful. All right, let's grab another quick break and we'll be right back.
Have you noticed most of the financial literature available is either so specific it doesn't apply or too generic to answer even the most basic questions? This revelation inspired David Holland to write his first two books, Confessions of a Financial Planner, Secrets to a Secure Retirement, and How to Get Great Advice and Avoid Financial Scams. These how-to guides contain easily accessible information on a wide variety of topics concerning personal finances. An effortless weekend read, you'll find clarification on what a mutual fund is, how to choose the right financial professional, and much more. Call Holland Financial at 888-747-PLAN to request a free excerpt from David's first book, Secrets to a Secure Retirement. The number again is 888-747-7526. Or visit davidholland.com for more information on this innovative book series.
And we're back. You know, another scam that is this one really drives me bonkers, and if you've heard me talk on the program about this, the charity scam. You know what? Anybody sends you anything in the mail, anybody calls you and wants you to contribute to a charity over the phone, and I get this sometimes myself, and I say, you know what I say, and I want you to repeat after me, I do not make charitable donations over the phone, period. If you'd like to send me something, go ahead. But I don't do that. And that's it. It's over. Because you don't know. Everything can be faked. They can fake their caller ID. Because they're going to want a credit card. They're going to want to take a credit card. And you don't give your credit card to anybody over the phone. So that's one of the big ones that AARP mentioned. The grandparent scam, of course, has been one that's been around where the scammer pretends to be your grandchild. And what they do, and then they need money. They call, they're in jail, they need something, they got in an accident. And so what they do is they look at obituaries, they look at all of the, you know, all those family members that are listed in the obituary. When somebody dies, they build, kind of map it out, and they figure out the relationships. And there's a lot of information out there on us on the internet. So they get a lot of that information, and this stuff happens. And it happens a lot to grandparents, especially those that, again, who are a little older, that are in their 80s, especially becomes a problem. And statistics say that grandparents of college-age people, the loss we're talking about here is no small amount. This is over $100 million problem a year. That's a big number. Let's see. Here's the other one that I'll get to. Well, no, I won't. I'm out of time. Okay, I'll give you the rest of these scams to look out for next time. Thanks for being with me.
Want to learn more about Real Money with David Holland? Visit us at realmoneyradio.com, where you can listen live or to the archives. You can also email us your questions, comments, or show ideas to info@realmoneyradio.com. Be sure to like us on Facebook at Real Money with David Holland.
Remember, nobody cares more about your money than you do. This has been Real Money with David Holland. Thank you for listening.